This episode is presented by The Green Grape.
Hi guys, I'm Jamie Oliver and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. How amazing. For the past decade, they've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and so much more. It's been 10 years, and they're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Southern Teague. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year
it's
to you,
my first show
friend.
Back since the holiday.
Sure as shit is.
Sure as shit.
Yeah.
Been a lot of scaredy cat people out there reaching out to me saying, "What, is the show over?" I'm like, no, we got Jamie Oliver up in here now, and he's naked.
We all are naked. That's a great thing about radio.
Yeah. We're all just hanging out naked.
They don't know. It's like when you when they say like you have to give a speech in front of a crowd, just picture everyone naked.
Yeah, but here we just get naked.
You get to picture us naked because we are, and you can't see us because it's radio.
I have to assume that there's at least a portion of the listener who's naked as well.
I always listen to the show naked.
I can't do that.
You know, it's not about being naked and listening to your own voice. You know, it's, like,
it's soothing.
All right. Anyway, so this show's going off the air next week.
Yeah. They're going to replace us with the Naked Chef.
Hey, man, what did you do for New Year's Eve?
I worked. I worked at both Amore Margo and kind of over at Blue Quarter. I was walking between the two bars.
What are you, Questlove now? You're just everywhere?
Boom.
You cloned yourself?
Indeed.
Dang.
So, yeah, I was just, you know, it's only 2.5 blocks, so I'm traveling back and forth, just saying hello to people. I wasn't behind either bar. I was just kind of being the
really? The
face and shaking hands. Yeah, it was a Monday night, you know. Wasn't crazy busy at either one.
This was the first year that I did not work behind a bar.
I know.
Same thing. But, you know,
the thing about
I didn't give my goddamn speech.
Yeah.
Which, you know, would have taken an entire year knowing me, you know, like all I do is talk and I don't really say anything. But the thing I always liked about, you know, like in the past, like working on New Year's Eve, it's like I've got a place to stand and I'm not crowded.
Yep.
You know, if I'm behind the bar. And I don't have to make plans.
Yeah.
That are inevitably going to be like a massive failure.
Well, I think the listener will understand when I say this. You know, Blue Quarter is their first New Year's Eve, so it's got no audience yet, you know. People like to go to the place that they go on New Year's Eve, and this place didn't exist last New Year's Eve.
As far as like
so
the regular like routine.
It's not the choice, right?
Yeah.
And then Amore Margo, I think I've talked about it on the show, but I definitely talk about it all the time.
About Amore Margo?
Yeah.
Yeah, you might have mentioned it.
How difficult that particular bar is to sell on New Year's Eve. You know,
well, it's a small space, so
yes, but also it's just what we offer. You know, I tried for years to sell it out for a lesser and lesser amount each year. I think I got all the way down to $2,000, where I was like, you and 19 friends, 20 people, $2,000
more for one cocktail,
and you can have the place from 9 p.m. till I don't care 4 a.m. whenever you pass out, and no takers. And the reason is, even though like I'm the bitter guy, right? But I don't have 19 friends who want to just drink bitter drinks all night long.
You got
so
one.
It's, so it's a
right here.
But you're usually behind your bar.
That's true.
So it's a real difficult place to sell. So this year we just didn't try to do anything fancy. It was just a regular Monday night service, no frills. And frankly, that's what it was, regular Monday night speed. So I was just there hanging out, chatting, saying hello to people, shaking hands.
What do you do for the New Year? Like, as far as like any kind of like self.
Oh, me personally?
Yeah, like.
I mean, I've made resolutions in the past, and many of them I've stuck to. You know, in 2000, my resolution was to drink water only, which I did for a year. And then 2001, my resolution was I could go back to alcohol, but only alcohol. So since 2000, all I've had to drink is water and alcohol. So that's one that I did for forever. Yeah. I try and, you know, I don't know, assess myself. I don't know that I lay down resolutions, but I try and assess myself and say.
I don't either. Like, I think there was a point like many years ago where I read something about like you know, like basically it was like I want to say it was like Martha Stewart or Oprah or something like that like posted something about like putting all the good things, like any kind of like accolade or any kind of like press write up or anything like that, or just like writing down on a piece of paper like something really awesome that happened. Like you got to catch up with an old friend that you hadn't seen in forever, and like you had lunch or whatever. You write that down. You throw all these things in a box, and then like on New Year's Eve, you like open it up and you start reading back through all the like positive things that happened over the last year. Now, that sounds like a really like kind of like fun and easy thing to do, but like in the moment you have to like really be adamant about writing that stuff down, or like being sure to like preserve those things. And then throughout the year, like once you get to the end of it, you go through and you start reading all these things, and it actually, I started doing this like maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and then you look back on the year with all the positive vibes, and then that
vibes,
it really, you got to keep those vibes, baby. But then it really motivates you to make the next year even more positive.
Yeah. Wow. That's inspired. A great thing.
Yeah. And so like,
I wish you had told me this a year ago. Maybe two.
Well, you know what? Now you got it. Now you now you can listen to the show
while you're naked. For me, last year would have started in January. I was in Miami in January. That's when I was given my award for Mixologist of the Year from Wine Enthusiast Magazine. That would have been, you know, number one in the box.
Yeah. And then you came out with your book.
And my book, and I opened up two new bars, and a lot of crap.
Exactly. A lot of crap. But but what it does is it
actually... A lot of positive crap.
A lot of positive shit. But it motivates you for the next year, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And it just kind of
I don't think that's exactly what I do. I don't necessarily look back, but I do every year kind of take stock and look forward, you know, like where am I going to aim the mark for the coming year? And, you know, it is based on the past year, but I don't think I've ever done it in such a tangible way. That's great. I'm going to do that. I'm going to start right now.
That's exactly what it is. And, you know, like the thing is,
I'm going to have a shoebox with a little slips of paper in it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, most people, when they make New Year's resolutions, it's always like, I'm going to work out more, or I'm going to stop smoking, or like, you know, like all those kinds of things that they end up not doing. So they end up being like, you know, when you get to the next New Year's Eve, you're like, oh shit, I didn't do any of those things.
Right. Suddenly it's a negative.
And you focus on the things that you didn't do, those couple things that you didn't do that you say you're going to do, instead of looking at all the things that you did do.
How many times did I go to Bargoto this past year? Like, that's a, you know.
Yeah, that's a... I'd like to know that trophy number.
I'd like to know that number.
Yeah.
Anywho, enough about you and I. We got a guest in the studio today.
We do.
Our dear friend, Amanda Witt. Coffee barista, cocktail nerd, former employee at Amore Amargo, current brand ambassador, bicycle enthusiast, artist. And what else are you? Bunch of crap.
I think you hit most of them.
All right. Perfect. Good show. Moving on.
Anyway, so we're going off
air next
week.
Welcome to the studio, Amanda.
Hello.
Super glad to have you. You know, Damon asked off the air, and he's like, you've been on the show before. And kind of weirdly, I thought you had too, but you haven't. Your first time on our show.
No.
You've been in this studio for other shows.
Yes.
Because you've got a lot of stuff to say.
Yes.
As we can tell already.
That's how I am.
So how was your new year?
Oh, my new year's beautiful. I was in Paris.
Whoa.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of it. It's in France. It's it's a really nice place.
I've been once.
Yeah. It's pretty chill.
It's pretty chill. Good vibes.
Yeah, had some great, you know, champagne.
Were you there for work or were you there for pleasure?
I was there for pleasure.
Nice.
Yes.
So you spent
drinking French champagne.
I was drinking French champagne.
You spent proper
French champagne. Yes.
You spent proper New Year's in Paris.
Yes.
You saw like fireworks by the Eiffel Tower.
Not really, no. We were in an apartment and a house party, so we tried to go out to the patio to see it, and then you realize, oh yes, the street faces the opposite direction. But, you know, I think after enough champagne, you're like, but I think that one might be it. You can just kind of make
Tower.
It up.
It'll
like,
be there next year.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty sure.
Yeah. It's not going anywhere.
It's pretty sturdy. It's a pretty sturdy building, so I don't think it's going anywhere. The most work-related thing I did was research a lot of Genepi. That was really excellent.
Cool.
Spent a little bit of time in the Alps trying to see, you know, trying to unlock the secrets of Genepi and what that was and how it can help one get down a mountain on a snowboard.
Wow.
Yeah.
What an exciting New Year's.
It's great.
Our lives suck.
Yeah. I was just hanging out in the East Village, not really doing anything, and you were in California.
I wasn't looking at a damn thing. Except for you know, I was with some good friends.
Yeah, of course. And your brother.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Good friends. And then also my brother. He's all right.
He's all right.
He's fine. He's pretty chill.
He's doing all right.
He's casual.
So let's talk about you some and your the trail that you've taken to be in this field that, that we all share. You started as a barista in Seattle.
Correct. Yes. I mean, I actually started baristaing outside of Olympia,
Washington. That's like the ground zero of baristas.
Right.
Yes.
Like, Seattle coffee.
Yeah. So I started as a barista. Mostly, I mean, the easiest way to explain it is I was a barista while I was also a student in a getting a liberal arts degree. And I looked around the cafe I was working at and everyone else. I was working on my undergrad. Everyone else I worked with had in their hands one, if not two, master's degrees and were also baristas. So I was like, how can I keep going to school if this is the case? Like, I love history. I love researching, you know. And then I ended up kind of finding those fulfilling things that I was loving about my, you know, liberal arts disciplines within coffee, you know, that like that same research, the same, you know, kind of taking your elements from, you know, beginning to end, rooting them in, you know, a historical context with the cafe and how the cafe has meant different things over the years. And then, yeah, so that's how I started baristing. I moved from Seattle to New Orleans
Let's slow down. What made you decide to move from Seattle to New Orleans as a barista?
Oh, boy.
Were you like, man, let's go make some chicory coffee at Café Du Monde. So, eat some Liar's Donuts with the locals.
I showed up about 2 years too early to actually be employed at a specialty cafe, but I went down there with the hopes of a friend and I opening something that kind of was more in that specialty coffee vein. And, you know, in the interim...
When you say 2 years too early, you mean it just hadn't happened yet?
It just hadn't happened yet. Right. Yeah. There was actually a place, I think it was called Velvet. I'd have to look it up. That actually moved 2 months after I left New Orleans.
So your timing was off.
My timing, you know, sometimes you're just too cool for your own good to too ahead of the time.
Misunderstood genius ahead of her time. So you bounced out of New Orleans, then you went to here, New York.
No. Oh. I went to Philadelphia first. In Philadelphia, I actually did help a group of people. There used to be a cafe there called Spruce Street Espresso. Hold
on. I'm not going to knock Philadelphia, he said, as he just prepared to knock Philadelphia. But who's living in New Orleans and says to themselves, you know what?
Fuck it.
I'm going to Philadelphia.
Well.
Where they make the cream cheese.
Right? I'm leaving po' boys and muffalettas behind for the cheesesteak sandwich.
Yeah. Going from king cake to bagels.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Cheese. Don't fucking knock Philly. Philly's fucking rad as hell.
It is rad.
Yeah.
But New Orleans is radder.
I mean, New Orleans.
Wow. Because you used to live in New Orleans.
I did, yes.
So you've got some allegiance.
Yes. Gentlemen.
Yes. Let the lady speak.
So I will say the time when I moved down to New Orleans, another challenge of it was the year after the BP oil spill.
Mm.
And so the amount of jobs in the job market for hospitality was not
tanking.
Yeah, it was tanked.
Oh man,
there was yikes. There was just not the work there available that there would later be in the hospitality industry. So at the time when I was there just wasn't year round work, especially as someone who is not from the area, was just not a possibility, and I hadn't saved enough to stay through the summer. So my idea originally was to move up to Philly, you know, work these jobs and then potentially move back at some point.
You were treating Philly as a seasonal break, mm-hmm. and you were going to go back.
Yes.
So again, you're weirdly ahead of your slot in New Orleans. You were ahead of the game that you wanted to play being there, and then you were ahead of the game that was played there being viable. Wow. So you spent some time in Philly, still barista.
Yes, still a barista. Helped the owners of Spruce Street Espresso open a new cafe called Oddfellows,
mm-hmm.
Which was really awesome, trying to mix the coffee service by day and then food and beverage by night, fully BYO, as is very characteristic for Philly. It's very common.
Because of the state liquor laws?
Yeah, state liquor laws. Yeah. Very expensive to get a liquor license, but very easy to be a BYO. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, we first and foremost had invested in kind of the coffee program. So I was working down there, That was a really long and arduous opening, kind of came to a natural conclusion. And when it did that, I popped on the, you know, the beautiful internet, Facebook. It's like, dear Facebook, I need a job. And our mutual friend Sam Lewington called me and asked me if I would like to be part of the opening of the Everyman Espresso in Soho.
How did you know Sam at that point?
I knew him from Seattle. We had,
right.
Yes, we had been baristas together.
Coffee plus bikes.
Coffee yes. Mecca.
Yeah, both coffee nerds and bike
well,
nerds.
Well, Sam Panics and Sam Lewington. Wait, which one of them was on and one of them wasn't the show? Sam
was on.
Yeah.
Movie
Panics.
On.
They're both
nailed it.
Yeah,
it was Sam. Sam was
got
here.
It.
Anyway, from Everyman Espresso, great espresso here yeah. in the city. So you came to help them open at that time. That was their second location. I think they have three now.
Yes. And that was just a really wonderful kind of transformative experience. There I got really serious into the coffee. I competed for the first time. So I competed in the United States Brewers Cup and then also the Big Eastern Brewers Cup, which are both the pour-over coffee competitions that are run by our trade organization, the USBC, which unlike the liquor industry, in coffee, most of your large competitions are actually run by trade bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than being run by brands, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, at some point had wandered into Amore Amargo and made friends with Souther.
Hey, that's me.
The previous head of the Double Buzz Coffee Cocktail Program, Natalie Check.
I thought you knew her before you knew me.
I did. I knew her just around,
through coffee.
Just from being around coffee. Yeah. And then at some point they decided to let me work at Amore Amargo.
For Double Buzz.
Yes.
Oh, no, well, she worked for Double Buzz, but then we had her on shifts at the bar as well.
But I wanted to talk about Double Buzz.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, yes.
You can talk about Double Buzz. You know more about it than I do, frankly. I was just in the kitchen.
So I locked Souther in the kitchen so he wouldn't yeah. be.
Every
so.
Saturday and
smart
Sunday
move.
For
yeah.
18 months of my life.
It was great. I ate very well during yeah. those 18 months.
Yeah, just the two of us, really.
Like, so explain Double Buzz. When was that situation? Because it wasn't it integrating the coffee with the spirits.
Yeah. So Double Buzz, the whole concept is it was a coffee cocktail program. There was no interest in having brunch at Amore Amargo, but there was an interest in seeing what the space could do being open during the day. And when you pair something that is inherently bitter like coffee, and you know all of the bitters that you have on hand, you can create these really incredible cocktails because you have these like really interesting and profound layers of flavors with those ingredients. So kind of sticking true to the Amore Amargo, no juice, no shaking, but just adding one more bitter element. This one though being an upper rather than a downer.
Yeah, and the way I always said it was, you know, Amaro's a buzz, coffee's a buzz, Double Buzz.
Yeah,
and yeah, our ethos was definitely like, well, our hashtag was fuck brunch. We offered a couple of snacks, but the idea was this is a drinking service with some snacks, not an eating service with some drinks.
Yeah, for sure.
And then brought Amanda in because Natalie was kind of running out of her time of wanting to be there, and I needed someone to continue the thing because I wanted to make it work. And, you know, I think you had come in and subbed for her when she needed some time off, or I don't know how it all
yes.
began, but there that started. But also, that's when I realized, I'm going to jump in a little, that's when I realized, like, oh, man. Because now that would be my second one, because Natalie was a barista as well. But that's when I realized, oh, man, baristas make the best bartenders, right? Because you take someone...
They always show up early.
Yeah, exactly. You take someone who's used to getting up early, dealing with people who want a specific thing exactly their way and kind of quickly.
Right.
Being pretty grumpy because it's early in the morning, and then not really leaving a lot of extra money on the tables, a.k.a. tips, gratuity, etc. You take that person who's already got the skills of operating a small counter-style space and making drinks, and you put them behind a bar where then they do get money from people. Man, these are grateful employees for a long time.
Yeah.
True or not true?
I would say true.
And also, you have all that skill. Like, you've got that, like, speed, execution, motivation, consistency, cleanliness, like, in a small space. So, like, baristas, you guys want to be bartenders? Hit me up.
Have I ever told you my story about my coffee situation and how I came to work with Stumptown?
No. I know you don't drink coffee or anything anymore,
well,
though.
Not anymore.
No caffeine.
No caffeine.
Crisp and clean.
Here's the thing. So back in the day, in the very early days of Prime Meats, when we opened for daytime service, you know, I'd walk into a bar, I'd walk into the bar at like 3 o'clock and start like kind of like resetting up the mise en place and everything to set up the bar. Like we had like a daytime cocktail menu, which is pretty much like old fashioned Manhattans, that kind of stuff. But then the full cocktail menu went live around like 3 or 4. I can't remember. But anyway, so we had, you know, baristas who got there at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oof.
Or, you know, we opened at 7 o'clock in the morning. You could get a Manhattan and a Cote de Boeuf at 7 a.m.
Ding, ding.
And I definitely did it a couple times. But, and it was really awesome because, like, a lot of the, you know, the local bartenders would show up, like, after their shift.
Sure.
And come get steaks and old fashions and shit at 7 a.m. Man. It's awesome.
That is awesome.
Anyway, so one day I get there. I've already got a full bar. People, like, already kind of like settling in, drinking and stuff. I'm showing up trying to set up the rest of the bar, you know, from the daytime kind of like minor setup. And the barista left for the day and kind of sucked because someone came in and they ordered a like a latte to go. And I go to make it, but they didn't restock the cups or the lids or the sleeves or the straws. Like the hopper was empty, like the coffee bean hopper and everything. So I had to like run around and grab all this stuff, restock it, and then like make this beautiful rosette on top of the to-go cup latte and everything. And I, you know, presented the check on a like a silver, like yeah, an antique silver check presenter and all this stuff. And the customer was like nice and appreciative, but I literally got nickel and dimed. Like someone just grabbed all the change out of their ashtray in their car and just threw it on the, like some of it was spilling off the tray, and like it was like something like, I think it was like $350 was the bill, and they left me like $325. Didn't even get
shorted you.
Shorted me. And like left like sugar like thrown everywhere, and like the stirred, like they stirred up their latte, which I'm like, why would you do that? It's already part of the coffee. And like, just made an entire mess, shortchanged me, all this shit. And meanwhile, I'm like, I'm going through more steps to do this fucking coffee than I am to like make old fashions and Manhattans for all these people who are like actually going to tip me. And like,
right.
And I've got a full bar and I've got this one person getting a to-go coffee and being kind of a dick.
Yeah.
So like,
I
was talking to Dwayne Sorensen from Stumptown about this, and he's like, all right, you're totally right. Like the shift of like the way things work, like it, obviously it's changed since then, but like he's like, all right, I want you to write a training manual for Stumptown because they were about to open up the Ace Hotel in Midtown. He's like, why don't you write the training manual? So I did it based on the Harry Johnson's Bartender's Guide
for
hotels and restaurants. And so they use that for Stumptown ever since.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Let's shift our focus.
But the thing is, what I'm saying before we should focus is the way that the like the mentality of making like a coffee and making a cocktail, it's the same thing with different ingredients.
Yeah.
But incorporating these two into the double buzz just makes all the sense in the world, correct?
You know, it would seem to, and everybody loved the idea. Not a lot of people showed up.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
I think it was too early. I think some of the Achilles heel of it was all the bartenders that I was like, man, we're going to mix Amaro and coffee. They were all like, oh, man, that's amazing. And all the baristas were like, oh, my God, we're going to mix coffee and Amaro. That sounds amazing. But then the baristas had to be at work at that time, and the bartenders were still asleep.
Exactly.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, hopefully including the Naked Chef, Jamie Oliver. We'll come right back and we're going to talk to Amanda Witt about what she's doing now with Tamworth Distilling. And she's got a couple of bottles here on the table. We're going to taste some juice. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
This episode is presented by The Green Grape, a family of three businesses on Fulton Street committed to supporting small-scale farms, celebrating seasonality, and delighting our customers. Order local, pasture-raised meats and cheeses to pair with our selection of fine wines and spirits, and we'll deliver it to your door at no extra charge. From great local gifts to providing you all you need for a delicious meal, The Green Grape offers truly special and hard-to-find products created by New York's community of local makers. Support independent grocers and our site to learn more. Visit greengrape.com. That's green with an E. GREENEGRAPE.com.
Woohoo! You know I can't whistle.
You can't whistle?
I'm not able to whistle. Like, you know, certain people cannot whistle. Yeah.
Really?
And that's the fucked up thing is, like, whenever I say I can't whistle,
people whistle.
People start whistling.
Is this like, have you seen the Peppa Pig clip?
Oh, man. Yeah.
I can't whistle. Anyways.
Anyway, so we're back anyway.
We are back.
You're listening to The Speakeasy. We have our friend Amanda Witt in the studio, and we were talking about making coffee, getting buzzed.
Yes.
And I get to see Amanda fairly often at my bar at Grand Army, and she always brings by these great products that I'm a huge fan of from Tamworth Distillery, which is...
Like spinning.
You're spinning?
Yes. Oh, no.
Well, it's maybe you should slow down.
Yeah, I think we've got a challenging bottle. I brought something that's been... I've been kind of hiding and keeping... now I'm touching Souther's spit bottle. It's great.
I mean, the cap's just spinning. It's not coming off.
Interesting. Well, hey, this might be something for us to taste at a later date, but good thing I brought two.
Okay, well, let's talk about what you're doing, first of all. Not physically, okay. But what you're doing. What are you doing? You're working for Tamworth Distilling. Tell us about them.
Okay, so Tamworth Distilling is a really amazing...
and they're based out of?
Tamworth, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
New Hampshire. One of the kind of a difficult... we were talking about like state-controlled like liquor situations. New Hampshire is a pretty difficult one.
Correct.
My friend Sarah, she owns a bar called 815 Provisions.
She sent us a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, she sent us a bottle of whiskey. And she was saying that, like, what was it, like last year or the year before, they just got chartreuse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brutal.
So to have this cool craft distillery based out of New Hampshire.
Making cool craft things.
Really cool.
Yes.
Tell us all about it.
So the distillery is kind of inseparable from the land that it is on. Tamworth, one thing that we really spend a lot of time focusing on is hand-forged ingredients that we can find or grow near the distillery. A lot of the grains that we are using, while we are not getting any from New Hampshire State yet, we are getting a lot from upstate New York, so fairly close as well. And then just in general, you know, we make a lot of gins with said botanicals. We make a new line, which has been really amazing. I brought today the Blue Lion.
Yeah.
Which is a chicory amaro.
Yep.
So I thought this one would kind of tie together, you know, talking about the coffee, talking about moving into cocktails, because Blue Line was the first collaboration that the distillers and I were able to do together.
So you had a hand in this?
Yes.
Rad. How long have you been with the company?
I've been with them for about 2.5 years. I started as part-time just brand ambassador, and then kind of the way that I am is just kind of a... you know, ingratiated myself more and more into being involved in more aspects of the business.
Sure.
I've always been really interested in how the liquids get created. That's always been very interesting to me. You know, from like the time of, you know, tasting and trying Amaro, I was like, how do you make that? So, that's kind of been the path there.
So tell me how that even transpired. You were working with them with some of these other products you just listed. They make a gin, they make a whiskey, they make some other things. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, hey, we're thinking about making an Amaro. And you're like, I've got some experience with Amaro.
So they had started saying that Matt and Jamie had wanted to make a product with chicory. And it was kind of our collaboration that I had brought up the idea of what if instead of this being more of a, you know, a chicory spirit, so like a chick, you know, thinking of it more like a chicory whiskey is that we think of it more as a chicory amaro. So something that not just would be able to be drank by itself, of course, which amaro is good at, but also being able to be mixed like an amaro. So
a chicory is just a bitter green that's used in randomly, we're talking about this, in coffee, and also randomly that you lived in New Orleans, and so did I, coffee in New Orleans specifically.
Yeah, it's the root that's most often used as a bittering agent in ingredients like this, but yes.
But your product that you're about to taste us on,
yes.
Can you get the lid off of that one?
I can.
Okay, good. I got the lid off the other one while you were talking.
Yes.
So this doesn't have any coffee profile to it. It's just the bitter chicory. and some other botanicals, I'm sure, that you may or may not be able to tell us about.
Yes. Yeah, so primarily, yeah, chicory, a lot of kind of earthy herbs. Let me grab you a cup. Yep. There you go.
Cool. I'll pour. You talk.
Wonderful. Yeah, and that uses roasted chicory, which gives it that kind of earthy flavor, and also the unroasted chicory, which is what gives it the bitterness. This is actually in a cocktail currently at Grand Army.
Yes.
Why don't you chime in? You're always chiming in.
Because I, you
He's
know,
a big
what?
Chimer.
I talk too much, so I was given a little room in the show.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's been really, you know, when we develop things like this, it's the creativity of, you know, what Matt and Jamie kind of have at their disposal. They both grew up in New Hampshire. They know about things that grew there, things that they can get, and they have just this, like, incredible wealth of knowledge. And it's kind of like when I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking about what they have, what they can create, and also, you know, what friends who have these incredible innovative bars down here, you know, like Amore, like Grand Army, like what they would want to use and what they would want to taste and what they would want to experience. So that's my corporate spiel.
I love it.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Like, they should be proud of you.
Also, I just like the word chicory. It's just fun to say.
It is. And chicory, it's a beautiful flower. Like, look at that blue.
Yeah. I don't think I ever knew that it had a big old blue flower. You know, as a chef, definitely use the greens. As an Amaro guy, definitely know about the root. I don't think I ever noticed it had a flower. So these guys are locals up there. They've been there all their lives. They know the botanicals of the area. But still, what made them say, hey, we're making gin, we're making whiskey. Well, let's make an Amaro.
So
was that you? Were you pushing that? Or
That was, yeah, I was definitely had a part in kind of pushing that to be, you know, because we had originally had, they had the tamarind cordial.
Oh, which is amazing.
Really very cool.
The Von Humboldt's Tamarind Cordial is one of our products. It's probably our best selling. I mean, it is our best selling product in New York. And it is a, you know, it's a low ABV tamarind cordial that is inspired by the travels of Alexander Von Humboldt, who is a 18th century explorer. So they're just kind of, they just kind of think of these things that are very off the wall, like these, like, the associations and the kind of correlations that happen in their mind are pretty wild, you know. And a lot of this is coming from the founder of Tamarind Distilling is Steve Grass. He's one of these people who's very ubiquitous in the spirits industry, but not in a way where a lot of people know his name, but they do know his work. So, for example, the concept behind Hendrick's Gin was a thing that he developed with William Grant's. Root, Ruby, and Rhubarb. Those beautiful farm bottles were products that when he was able to sell that line, that's when he was able to break ground and build this distillery.
Got it.
So, yeah, he's just very ubiquitous in the industry and the things that he has consulted on and helped with. And he has this really clear, like, kind of vision of these brands and, like, kind of how to make them, you know, really interesting and full and complete. So.
All right. You having fun working for them?
I do. Yeah. They're really great people. It's just such a great team. Maura is my immediate boss, one of the easiest people to kind of talk to and relate to. I'd never seen myself as someone who would move into a brand ambassador role. That was not, you know, my path or my goal in becoming a bartender. So it was like perfect to happen with these people, you know?
I'd pause you there, though, and say, was it your plan to become a bartender?
Well, no.
Right. So you're just, you know, I wouldn't call you a leaf in the wind by any means, but you're open and receptive to opportunities when they arise and you take them on and you excel.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, Southern, it wouldn't have, well, you know, and I will be clear, like the, you know, my entry into the cocktail world was because of being able to get trained and have the experience I did working with you at Amore Margo. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah. You know, I can only do so much, and then you have to do the rest on your own. So you did it yourself, too. So thanks for that. I'm going to be humble. This stuff is delicious. It tastes very much to me on its own, as we're having it now in a little glass neat. It's kind of chilly here in the studio, so it's kind of cool. It's cooler than, like, a room temperature spirit. It's kind of got this, and Damon can say yes or no, because
you lost me at Humboldt and grass.
You used to drink a lot of tea.
No, sorry.
But it tastes very tea-like, right?
Yeah, it's like it's somewhere between coffee and tea, which is like I mean, but really the only like the coffee part is because of like drinking New Orleans coffee with like chicory involved in. But it's definitely more like a black tea, like a really strong black tea.
Yeah,
which
like
I love.
It's like a second or not second brew, but like a double or triple brewed black tea. Yeah, it's even got a little like hint of sweetness on the finish, florality on the nose. Like, I dig it.
Yeah, or like a black tea. Like left on the counter a little while. You know.
Yeah, totally. How many states are you guys in now?
We are currently in. I'm gonna count as I go. We're in Pennsylvania. We're in New York. We are in New Hampshire, of course. I think we just launched in Maine, and then we are in Boston, so in Massachusetts. So cool. We have five states. We do have a cap on our production, so, you know, we kind of have this, you know, what we make for the year is what we can make. And then we just kind of are very, you know, like aware and selective with how we sell around.
That cap on production, is that imposed upon you by the state, or is that your choice?
That is the size of our still.
Oh, so okay. There you go. Yeah. So it's your choice based on the size of your equipment.
Yeah.
I mean, so like just for like a lot of our listeners out there, is there any way for anyone to order online and get them like our buddy Paul Finn in Texas, you know, at the garage?
Yeah. Right. If you have if you are living in a state where you can get things shipped to you, we have the majority of our line is available through warehousewines.com. Cool. And they can ship to you any state that they're legally allowed to. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Warehousewines.com.
Yes. Very easy. Very simple.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah. Also, if you go to our, you know, tamworthdistilling.com, it'll send you links to all of our, you know, we have our map. So if you live somewhere where we can sell, we'll show you where.
What do you think the growth program, or what do you know the growth program is like for this distillery? Like, as far as like, you know, you're in five states now. Mm-hmm. What do you have any projections for getting out there? Like upping production?
I know that is, that's like a more complicated question than I think I'm personally able to answer. I know that there is a, you know, there are sites on, for us, it's kind of, as I mentioned before, our founder also works with other companies. So a lot of what we do is, you know, it really does end up like playing as a proof of concept for that side of the business. So there isn't as much worry of, oh, we need to increase our case sales. We need to increase our bottle sales.
Well, also like the products that you guys make, which are awesome, they're kind of, they're super universal. I found with using these products, but they're also like so unique. So like it kind of like, it's one of those situations where it's like, all right, it's super unique. So you don't really understand how to project it, like the growth of sales for that. Right.
Right.
Because you're like just doing cool, weird shit. You know,
but I think it sounds really smart that they're taking the approach of we're going to make as much as we can make, which isn't much.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We'll grow organically from there. Like if we get to the place where you got to buy a new still, we'll install a new still. But until then, we'll make as much as we can make and we'll sell it.
That's what I love about this. You know, like
It's smart. It's a smart program.
To me, this is like one of the situations where, you know, like even, especially based out of New Hampshire, which like as we mentioned before, like there aren't, you don't have the access because of state liquor laws to like all these. Even things like chartreuse, you know, until very recently. But you don't have, like, with a lot of these different states, you don't have access to, like, the crazy weird shit. And you guys are making the crazy weird shit.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
If we can't get it, we'll make our own.
Yeah, totally.
And it's also
it makes it special, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's really wonderful, too, as the distillery is, you know, when we say Tamworth is a small town, like, this is not an exaggeration. The town has the still, they have a small community theater, which people come from out of the area to perform in. There is a farmer's market and then there is a cafe and the cafe is owned by Steve, who also owns the distillery. It's a small town. So when you look at how the distillery and how the cafe is able to, you know, draw people into the area and also help people who, you know, a lot of people my age, if they want to move back to a small town, their employment options are very limited. And that's usually one of the things that prevents them from doing so. Like, this is a way that we were able to, like, create some jobs for folks who maybe, you know, want to go back, like, want to live in the area where they grew up. But, you know, maybe not necessarily, you know, they may not necessarily have a job otherwise. So this was another, like, really excellent thing about the distillery that I really loved is seeing how it's kind of created a community around it in Tamworth. So
sure.
Now, are you the only person in your position with them, being that they're so small?
So the only I'm
like
the
ambassador. What is your role called?
I don't even know. Brand ambassador. So I am the New York brand ambassador. We also have Brett up in Boston, and he is doing my job. He's doing my job up there. You know, doing his sales, doing the visits, and then I think, and then we have someone in the for the state of New Hampshire. So
just three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tiny. It's pretty rad. Okay, so I cracked open this other bottle that's got a different liquid in it. There's no label on it to speak of, really. There's something on there, but it's handwritten.
Yes.
What you got for us?
So this is the Eau de Musk.
This, is this perfume? Is this, do I put this behind my ear or on my tongue?
This was in the news a bit recently.
Oh, really? For what?
Yes. So it is, I'm going to let you guys taste it first.
Okay, cool.
It has a little bit of a controversial ingredient in it.
Controversial? Uh-oh. Am I getting dosed?
I've already dosed
Unfortunately,
myself.
No. So it is a essentially a blend of whiskey, flower honey, and castoreum, which is the... it's actually a gland that is harvested from beavers.
Oh, the beaver gland whiskey. Yeah. Yes, I read about this in the... in the news of the weird, I've never heard of this. What are you talking about?
Yeah. So yeah, this is the Eau de Musk. It's a so Tamworth. We're looking through history of you know, beaver trapping has been, you know, part of the Northeast for a long time, and there continues to have to be folks who are culling populations of beaver around around the areas because, you know, they are prolific builders, so they will flood your parking lots, flood your house.
Sure, they become a nuisance.
Yeah, they're, you know, nuisance. So we partnered with someone who's contracted through the state to trap these beavers and decided to make a spirit using using these glands.
What's it called again? Say the name.
I'm going to pronounce it wrong. Castoreum.
Castoreum. All right.
And it is...
look it up, people.
Historically was used as the... used as like a peach or a fruit essence in order to back those up in perfumes, in food. It's still... you know, listed when you see things like that say natural flavor on it, this can be listed as a natural flavor. So it's one of those things that you have definitely had and drank before, ate before. And we were just very transparent about what it was and what it was made out of.
Rad.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
It actually smells like...
it smells real floral and honey is what I got off the nose.
It smells like fresh tobacco leaves.
Oh my God, you're right. You know, I used to live
it
in...
It kind of tastes like Perique.
I used to live in Durham, North Carolina, and it smells like any day that it rained there.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy cow, you're totally right. Very visceral memory for me right away.
I got that old factory shit.
Yeah, I got that old factory shit.
That old factory shit.
Yeah, so, you know, nothing like sipping on some nut sack whiskey with your friends. It's great.
Yeah. Just trapping beavers
I'm pretty
with
sure
my mouth.
There might still be some available at warehousewine.com.
Got a little beaver in my mouth. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what you're saying. We're live radio, bro.
So this is you're making enough for this to go on market and get it an actual label, or?
So this is actually what we had left from last year. It sold out pretty much immediately last year.
It sold out really fucking fast.
I mean, people are down with the beaver.
Yeah, they just want to know.
They
just want to get involved, man. Going back to that, it's like. Like I was saying before, you know, like what I was asking about before is like, as far as like the production levels that you have, like, is it, I mean, if you can't, if you're like Supreme doing like a sneaker, like release, that's like limited, like everyone wants that shit. So is it kind of like the same situation? Is it a hindrance or is it like an advantage for the brand to make such small runs of this stuff and have it be so sought after?
Yeah.
'Cause I know that I've got like, I've been rocking your shit in cocktails at my bar for years now, and like you've been able to keep up with the production, like especially on the tamarind.
Yeah.
But like the chicory, like we definitely use that in the cocktail. I think it's like a half ounce in the cocktail.
Yeah, things like this a little goes a long way. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I was just wondering, like, because I don't think we've really run into a situation where we've run out yet, but like it must be like on a bigger scale, must be hard to keep up with. I mean, I guess that's why you're only in five states so far.
Absolutely. And also it's like when I go to, you know, go to approach about, you know, getting menu placements, doing these things, it's also being very strategic about, you know, I'm not the kind of rep that's in 30 bars in a day. You know, yeah. I am going into, you know,
I do that without even repping.
You would.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like going in, being very selective and also knowing, okay, if I have, you know, my blue line, I have this amount for the year, how much, you know, and I know that I'm going to have a couple of these big depletion accounts. I maybe won't be trying to push this in meetings with other folk, you know, and that's also just to like kind of keep an eye.
You have a relatively close understanding of your supply limit, mm-hmm. so you don't shove it on everybody because then you'll be shorting everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like if everybody wants it, then no one's getting it.
Yeah, but absolutely. Yeah. To Damon's question about, you know, kind of this, you know, I don't really think that we as a distillery participate in drop culture per se the way that like something like Supreme does, but there's definitely...
it's similar.
I don't know why I brought that up.
But definitely to say, like, you know, when we do have something like this where it is small, it's like, you know, a smaller production, and it will sell out really fast. And it's because of, you know, spending the time to generate that curiosity to have these conversations, you know.
Well, and the time you've already spent as a company instilling trust, you know, like mm-hmm. people trust that when you make something, it's going to be good, even if it sounds weird.
Yeah.
So if you make a small amount, people are going to buy it. Especially
because it sounds weird.
Maybe that too, actually, right?
Yeah.
That's why I like it.
Well, that's
get weird and stay that way. Yeah.
We all are aware of your predilections towards the weird.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty fascinating stuff. It's delicious. I'm sad to hear that it's not out there because I'd like to. And you know, I can't really talk about it too much yet, but I'm working on a new project that's all about American whiskeys, and that sounds as American as it can be. American whiskey with some beaver gland in it.
Yeah, man.
Right, we make a riff on the monkey gland using this.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Goodness.
Goodness indeed. Well, let's do some quick plugging.
Okay.
Where can you be reached?
I can be reached if you want to get in touch with me. You can visit our website, tamworthdistilling.com. You can reach out to me on Twitter at I Make Your Coffee or at Instagram at Make Your Own Coffee with the letters UR.
Make your coffee. Make your own coffee.
Yeah.
Make up your mind.
It's been a complicated career, you know. And then also you can find me. I'm the only Amanda Witt on Facebook that's holding liquor in their profile photo. Profile photo. So Witt, I'm easy to find.
Witt, WHITT, Amanda
Correct.
Witt.
Yes.
Well, man, it's been really great having you on the show today, and thanks for bringing us these treats.
Thank you
and
for having
open
me.
Our eyes to
beaver glands.
Beaver whiskey that smells like wet. Fresh tobacco.
I think nothing about
faintly
everything you just said is offensive to me.
Yeah, no, it's been a great show.
Whiskey, beaver gland, fresh tobacco.
Let's do
Amanda Witt.
That's all we need. Is like
all my favorite words.
Poker table, maybe, and some Cote de Boeuf.
Let's do it.
Motorcycle.
Anyway, by motorcycle.
All right. This has been a fantastic day. Thanks so much again for coming on the show. Check out Tamworth. Really cool, innovative stuff coming out of a place where you might not expect it to come from, based on, you know, certain liquor laws and our weird government and state controlled stuff. But it's really heavily showcased at my bar, Grand Army.
Oh, yeah.
So if you are in the New York area, ever come by and swing by.
Can I plug one more thing?
Yeah.
If you're in the city of Philadelphia, we do, at the Art and the Age store, we have a lot of our products available in their tasting room as well.
Also a very cool line of spirits.
Yes.
Yeah.
And bar tools and, books. Yeah. Amazing stuff. But yeah, the Art and the Age store down in Philly. It's another place to see us and
taste
it.
Art in the Age in Philadelphia.
Correct.
Yeah, and of course, Maury Margo's got the Blue Lion on the back bar. And I think we have the Tamarind still at Mother Pearl, no?
Yes, correct.
So your stuff's out there. People are drinking it. Maybe they don't even know they're drinking it, but I hope they've been educated and edified a little bit today.
Go find it. Check it out.
Try it.
We've got some other stuff to plug. So you're going to be down at San Antonio Cocktail.
I leave tomorrow. Yes, I'm going down there to talk about... how you shouldn't give anything away for free, shouldn't comp anything. I know that sounds like a harsh line to stand on, but I've got a lot of psychological reasons and proof to back that up. In the end, you literally take something away when you give something for free.
Yeah.
And you don't want to take anything away from your guests.
For sure. Yeah, you're going to be down there with a lot of our friends.
Oh, yeah, man.
Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it this year, but our buddy Paul Finn, friend of the show, he's going to be... giving from the garage in Austin,
great guy.
Texas, doing his class on personal mise en place, and
Which a lot of personal mise en place, which he's talking about, like how to get your kind of life together, get your insurance in line, get.
Yeah,
he talked about it on the show when we had him on.
Yeah, and I have to give him a mountain of thanks because he, you know, even though I am a business owner and a brand ambassador for Brooklyn Gin, like I work for and run and with small companies that don't necessarily have. Like the ability to
insure its employees.
Insure its employees. And, and Paul Finn definitely, he shepherded me through the whole process of getting health insurance, which I haven't had for a few years. So
amazing.
Big thanks to you, Paul.
Highly recommend going to his classes at the same time as mine. So you have to flip a coin.
Yeah.
There's
an app for that.
You can probably rely on the fact that.
Flip a Fernet coin.
Yes. Maybe. You can probably rely on the fact that that you'll hear all about my class after this show, on this show, whereas his may not get as much of an audience. So, you know, honestly, hedge your bets and go to his.
That was very kind of you in the weirdest way.
High tide raises all boats. That's true. You know, let's all go down and learn some stuff at San Antonio Cocktail Conference. I'm looking forward to going down there. I'm actually going to be staying with, you remember Charlie Manhattan who was on the show?
Oh, yeah, of course.
I'm staying at his place. He just got married and was just here last 2 weeks ago over New Year's. He was here on his honeymoon.
Oh, yeah, right.
With Dana Lynn, his new bride. Anyhow, all right, so that's all I've got. We've got some cool guests coming up in the future. Simon Ford's going to be on the show.
We've got the future's bright. 2019, man.
Future's looking good.
It's looking good.
All right.
Well, I guess that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thank you to Amanda Witt.
Thank you,
Souther.
Cheers.
For starting this year with me again.
Love it.
Really appreciate you being my co-host and friend. And check out Heritage Radio Network. .org for many other programs like this one. Probably not as good, though. and click on the Beating Heart to donate to the station so we can keep hanging out with awesome people like Amanda. And until next week, y'all. Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants
Want more of the Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand and make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the Beating Heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the Beating Heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.